This is 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information, go to kuci.org. Welcome to In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. Hello, I'm Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we're going to be talking today about this month in the garden, April in the garden, Tina.
Hi, Katrina. Oh, it's springtime. Hooray.
Yay.
Everything's so beautiful. We finally got a little bit of rain in March, and the hills are greening up, and in my neighborhood anyway, there's poppies blooming, California poppies. It's just a great time of year.
It's a wonderful time of year, and the hills are green.
I know. I love that. I hope it would be nice if we got a shower or two in April so that they stay green. Into June anyway.
Oh, I agree with that one, but what a great month this is.
It's a great month in the garden from a visual standpoint, but oh, it's a busy month in the garden also.
A lot of work to be done this month, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's an exciting time, and one of the reasons it's so exciting is that this is when the nurseries all have lots of perennials and plants like azaleas in bloom. And so it's a great time to go out and look at stuff, and you can actually see it in bloom and then visualize it in your garden. So it's a great time to plant from both a selection standpoint in the nursery and a weather standpoint, because April's still pretty mild, but the ground is warming up.
My azaleas are going off. How about yours?
I don't have any. I have one azalea bush. I would really like to get more, so maybe this will be the year when I get some more.
Indeed, indeed. You know what I planted last month was the plant you gave me, was it poppy?
I gave you some seeds for the pale pink poppy. Is that the one you planted?
I can't wait for it to grow up.
Yeah.
So excited about that.
It's called a peony poppy, and it's an annual poppy. It gets about 3 to 4 feet tall, and when the flowers bloom, they're a pale, pale pink. And they look like peonies. They're just a big, fluffy pom-pom kind of shape with a gajillion petals.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, and they're just an annual. They only last for a few weeks. The bloom only lasts for a few weeks. But they're super fun, and I really enjoy them. And the one that I have is actually a pass-down plant. And so I passed down some of the seeds to you. I was given it, gosh, over 30 years ago probably by a friend who was a gardener. But I think you can order peony poppies online. The better time to plant them is in the fall, although you can try and sprinkle some seeds in the springtime and see if you can get them to bloom. But they don't like super hot weather, so it'll be a race to see if they get big enough to bloom before the hot weather sets in.
Oh, indeed. There's so much fun going on. And I also have some of your Shasta daisies in my yard.
It's a great time in April to plant any perennial. And we started talking about doing that last month in March, and April continues to be one of the best months of the season for planting. And probably the last month, for me anyway, that I would try planting natives and drought-tolerant stuff.
Oh, yeah, we're kind of pushing it right now.
Yeah, some people might still try and plant them in May, but my philosophy is that they actually go kind of dormant. Their active growth time is not in the hot summer months. So I really like to get them in the ground, preferably in the fall, so that they can take advantage of winter rains and really get established before they have to deal with the heat. But if you just ran out of time and you still want to finish planting out a section of your yard in some drought-tolerant plants, you can still do it in April because we will probably have May gray and June gloom. And so if you do it particularly in early April, you should get 3 months before the weather really turns hot.
And it also depends on what part of Orange County you live in.
Oh, absolutely, right. If you're near the coast, it's not going to get hot as it does if you live inland Orange County. So in general, if you want to plant some natives, I would go ahead and do it this month, but maybe think about waiting until October if you don't make it this month.
And if you don't make it this month, you could plant some vegetables.
Yes, this is a great time to switch from those cool season veggies to the warm season veggies. What are you planting this year, Katrina?
Tomatoes.
Of course. Any favorite varieties?
Oh, my God. I like Early Girl. You know, I like getting my early tomatoes in. And then I just keep experimenting with tomatoes. You know, Celebrity's another one I like.
Those are two of my favorites, too. And the reason that they're two of my favorites is they're both hybrids, which means they've been bred to resist a lot of diseases. And although I do love the open-pollinated or heirloom varieties of tomatoes as well, they're usually a little bit more susceptible to diseases. So I like to plant some Celebrities, some Early Girls, because I know that they'll probably survive the fungal diseases, whereas some years the heirlooms just don't do so well.
You know, and I also find with the heirlooms, I don't quite get as many.
True. Yeah.
And I'm a glutton for tomatoes. I mean, I could just eat tomatoes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner this time of year. I'm just so excited about them happening.
Well, we were encouraging everybody to start planting their tomato plants in March. But I know a lot of us, our winter gardens were still going strong in March. You know, we still had a lot of peas and lettuces and maybe some of the cold crops, broccoli, cabbage, etc. Carrots. I still had a lot of carrots in my garden. So I did plant some tomatoes in pots in March, but I'll be planting more this month in the ground in my raised beds. There just wasn't room for them last month in the raised beds.
I know, it's amazing. Such tough decisions, huh?
Yeah. So do continue planting your warm season veggies. I probably would do mostly transplants now.
Exactly.
For peppers and tomatoes and eggplant. I would still do seeds for green beans and maybe even the squashes like zucchini and cucumber. I would still plant seeds this month out in the garden, and I would direct sow those. I wouldn't start them indoors because the soil's warm enough now.
You know what, Tina, what I'd probably do is plant both, direct seed and plant something that's you know, I get at the garden store, because then I have it's a few weeks difference in being ready to take off the vine.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get a 6-pack of zucchini plants, for instance, that have already, you know, were started from seed, you know, maybe 4 weeks ago, you'll get zucchini a lot faster by planting those.
And give half of them away.
Yeah, because you don't need six. But the tomato plants and peppers and eggplant especially, if you wanted to grow those from seeds, they would have been better started indoors back in January or February and then planted out in the garden now. So if you didn't do that, then maybe consider doing transplants. That's what I'm going to do, is get transplants of tomatoes. I won't try starting them from seed at this point.
Same here. And then I'll probably in 2 or 3 weeks, I'll probably plant some more. And then some more, and then some more.
Especially with green beans, I like to have those coming along throughout the season. Because if you plant too big of a row, especially since it's just my husband and I, you know, we can't eat all those green beans at once. So I do like to plant, you know, half a row now, and then in 2 weeks another half a row, and that way your season gets extended, and you have green beans for, you know, longer, and they don't all poop out at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then I think I mentioned this last month, a couple of hints for saving space. We really like to use the concrete reinforcing wire as a trellis. And I'll just mention that again in case folks didn't listen to last month's show. And you just buy that at Home Depot. It's this wire mesh, but it has really big spaces that are about 4 inches in between each wire, and it comes in sheets, and it's used to reinforce concrete, so it's actually laid down on the ground before concrete is poured for a foundation or a patio. But what we like to use it for is we get a couple of the tree posts, you know, those round posts that you use to stake trees. I like to get the 6-foot or 7-foot ones. And you just put those in the ground, and then you just take a sheet of this concrete reinforcing wire and use zip ties to tie it to the posts. And then you have an instant trellis.
And you have to make sure your posts are dug in quite well.
Yes.
Because it will get heavy.
Yes. I do mine about 18 inches, or I should say My husband gets to dig down about 18 inches.
Same here.
So that's nice. Or get your gardener or someone with a strong back to do that digging for you. And then once you have your posts nice and settled in, you tie that concrete reinforcing wire to the posts. And as I said, instant trellis. And I use it for my tomatoes. I actually trellis my tomatoes rather than put them in cages. They take up way less space if you grow them like you're espaliering a fruit tree, growing them where the branches go horizontal.
And it's wonderful because the tomatoes get so much more light.
They love
and
it.
Air. It's wonderful.
I think the disease is less because
I do too.
They're opened up to air circulation rather than being all crunched together inside of a tomato cage.
Yeah. So, we've been using for probably 10 years now. I really, really like it.
And then the other thing that you can grow on them, well, you can grow almost anything on them, but the other things I do this time of year is, of course, the green beans. So I trellis those. But what I've done the last couple of years is I'm also trellising cucumbers.
Absolutely. Cucumbers are wonderful on them, trellising.
Yeah, they seem to like it a lot. And then the other thing I'm doing personally is I am just planting, because I only have 3 raised beds, I'm just planting pickling cucumbers. Because if you let them get a little bigger than you would for pickles, they make great slicing cucumbers. They're not as long as the traditional slicing cucumbers. But again, you know, for 2 of us, 1 pickling cucumber is perfect. You use up the whole thing and you don't throw away half of it.
Sweet. Great idea.
Yeah. So what are you planting? What other things are you planting in your garden?
Oh, I'm going to plant more cucumbers.
Oh, yeah? You like different varieties?
I like different varieties of cucumbers. I like eggplant. We eat eggplant, so we like that a lot, too.
Uh-huh. Do you like the long Japanese eggplant or the more traditional eggplant?
I tend to favor the long Japanese eggplant.
And
I like to grill them.
Ah.
And I think they're more tasty grilled. I mean, just with a little bit of salt on them. Oh, my goodness, they're so tasty.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Where the more oblong ones I tend to put if I'm making, like, dishes or casseroles.
Uh-huh.
But we barbecue a lot in the summertime, so those Japanese ones are perfect for barbecuing.
Oh, good.
Yeah, a little olive oil, avocado oil, a little salt. Oh, yeah.
Well, and the other thing, speaking of barbecuing, don't forget to refresh your herb gardens this time of year. Especially with the heat-loving herbs like basil. I want to have lots of basil over the summer so you can pair that with your tomatoes that you're growing.
Do you know, we both start smiling at the same time when we're talking about basil and tomatoes.
That sounds delicious right now. But just in general, I know I like to refresh my herb garden about twice a year because some of it starts getting a little woody or rangy or that some of my thyme plants will die out. And so I just like to pop in, you know, new thyme, new oregano. Although the oregano actually is pretty much a weed. I rarely have to replace that. It kind of likes to take over. Do you have any favorite herbs that you like to put in this time of year?
Oh, basil.
Just basil, yeah.
Yeah. But oregano, thyme, the normal.
Yeah.
And it's just so nice. I mean, you could go buy a whole plant for what it would cost you to buy a sprig in the store.
Oh, absolutely. For $2.99, $3.99.
And you have it all season long. And I like to plant it outside my kitchen because I can just go out and whatever I need, I can just go grab. I don't have to go to the garden.
That's right. And particularly if you're doing container gardening, I actually like to plant them in themed pots. I just think it's kind of fun. So if you like to make a salsa, I like to do a salsa themed plant where you put a tomato, whatever kind of peppers you like in your salsa, serrano or jalapeno, a little cilantro, even though it's going to bolt, you know, put it in anyway. You get to use it for a few weeks.
Tina's much more organized than I am.
And onions. I love to plant some green onions in. So I get big pots, you know, a pot that's like 16, 18 inches wide, and put 1 tomato plant, 1 pepper plant, and a bunch of these herbs and onions. And then I have the whole salsa, you know, in a single pot. It's kind of fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, and you can give them as gifts, you know, if you have a wedding shower or you're going to go visit someone. It's kind of fun to give a salsa pot as a gift. Or another pot I like to do is a bruschetta pot, where you do the same thing, tomatoes, but instead of cilantro, you would use basil and maybe some onions as well. So it's kind of fun to think of these as gifts and, you know, fun themes. You can make cool signs that, you know, say, especially if you're going to be on a garden tour, you know, in April, because April's a big garden tour month. So it's kind of fun to have some things like that.
You're going to be on a garden tour this year, aren't you?
I am. I'm on the Mary Lou Hurd garden tour this year.
And when is that?
That is the weekend of May 5th and 6th, and I'm on the Saturday. And if you haven't ever gone, it's a great a tour that is a fundraiser for a women's shelter. And it's free. The tour is free, but the way they do the fundraising is they just have a donation bucket at every garden. And so you just throw in whatever you feel is appropriate at each garden you visit, or you just write, you know, one check and put it in the bucket at one garden and call it a day. So it's really fun.
It's a wonderful tour.
It is. It's called Real Gardens by Real People, and what that means is that they get volunteers of real people like me to allow their gardens to be on the garden tour. So you actually are going to people's own personal gardens, and it's not they're not showcased, you know, usually not professionally designed or maintained. Maybe a little bit, but you know.
Yeah, I've been to some of those gardens, Katrina. They're really pretty spectacular.
Yeah, well, they usually have some pretty avid, you know, owners and gardeners. Yeah, and so, and of course, a lot of us have a little bit of professional help. Although my gardeners are not ever allowed to touch any of the flowers, but, you know, they're allowed to mow and trim things, but that's about it.
My gardener's allowed to mow and blow.
Yeah.
And you do not touch anything else.
Right. But it's a fun tour, and it's all over Orange County. So the gardeners volunteer from all over Orange County, and you basically just look at the program and decide which ones you're interested in seeing, and you drive to those gardens and do as many as you can in whatever time you have.
I think we should do a show on it this year, don't you?
We could, yeah. Yeah. And then that's not the only garden tour. You know, there are lots of garden tours all over. Usually I think the newspapers, Los Angeles Times, Orange County Register, will do a list of the garden tours throughout the county. And so you can take a look at that. Or you can just Google garden tours in Orange County, and I'm sure that stuff will pop up. Sherman Gardens usually has one.
It's a fun thing to do.
It is a fun thing to do. It's a great thing to do to take your mom, your aunts, you know, your kids, if they're interested in that kind of thing.
I like to get it started early.
Before it gets, yeah, some days it can be hot, especially in May. We'll get one of those unseasonably hot.
Well, also traffic. True. I tend to like mornings, so I like to go on the garden tours in the mornings.
True, yeah.
Get in, I can see more and I'm done.
That's right, yeah.
Well, anyways, April in the garden.
Yeah, so we talked about the veggie garden. Trying to think if there's anything we left out. We talked about the veggies.
Plant, weed, weed, weed.
Right, be sure you do weeding. Plant your refresher herbs. Get ready for your fruit harvest. Now, April is pretty early to be harvesting fruit trees, but odds are you're going to start having scads of strawberries in April. And, of course, we all know that those strawberries are pretty perishable. So you have to, you know, pick those in the early morning, if possible, when the weather's still cool. And you want to make sure that you are probably mulching them with straw if you didn't mulch with plastic. And the reason is if those strawberries sit on the dirt, on the soil, as they mature, odds are they're going to have some rot on the side of the fruit that's sitting on the soil.
And, you know, I'm a huge advocate of mulch. You know, and that straw is just wonderful. It keeps the earth cool when the days start getting hot, and keeps the water in the ground, and it looks pretty. And
there's just so many benefits of mulch. Remember, if we have new listeners, new gardeners, mulch is something that sits on the top of the ground. So mulch can be compost that just sits on top of the ground. It can be straw. Can be bark chips. And the kind of mulch that you choose depends on what you are doing in the garden where you're putting it. So I would use bark chips in areas where I have permanent plantings, like roses and shrubs. But in areas where I have veggies and annual flowers, I wouldn't use bark chips because you're going to be digging up the earth frequently when you have annual veggies and flowers. And you don't want those bark chips being incorporated into your soil because they will steal nitrogen out of your soil to decompose the bark chips. So when you mulch your veggie garden, you either want to use straw, as Katrina just mentioned, or you can use compost, which has already been decomposed, and just lay that on top of your soil in between your plants. Don't let the compost touch the stems of your tomato plants or pepper plants. Make sure it's about 3 or 4 inches away from the stems. But like in between your rows of plants, definitely if you put a little layer of mulch, it will really, as Katrina said, help keep your soil temperature moderated, keep the water from evaporating, lots of good things. And best of all, keep the weeds down, because who likes to weed?
Exactly. You know, one time I planted, I had chips in my garden, and my plants start dying. And I found out they were stealing the nitrogen.
Yeah. You have to be careful about the wood chips, especially cultivating them into the soil. You don't want to do that. What I do in my front yard, which is all perennials, you know, shrubs, roses, and other perennials, is when I want to plant a new perennial, I rake those wood chips out of the area where I'm going to dig the hole so that they don't accidentally get incorporated in that soil.
Well, I didn't know it. One time, a fellow master gardener, Kay Havens, came over and I killed geraniums. Like, how do you kill geraniums? I killed a whole bed full of geraniums.
Oh, dear.
There was no nitrogen in my soil.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't know.
Yeah. So mulching is good, but choose the right mulch for the area that you are mulching.
And I love straw in my vegetable garden.
I do, too.
I love it. It reflects up and it gets more light in the tomatoes. It kind of reflects the sun underneath them. And it's pretty. It's very pretty.
Yeah, and it decomposes pretty quickly. By the fall, when your summer veggie garden is done, it's pretty much decomposed, and you can either rake it off and put it in your compost bin if you want it to decompose further, or if it's mostly decomposed, you can actually till it into the soil if it's, you know, looks like it's really good and decomposed. And it's cheap. It's a really cheap mulch, too. You can get a bale of straw for how much? $10 or something
like that.
Yeah.
It's not very much.
You want to make sure that you're asking for straw, though, and not hay. You want something that's weed-free, and you don't want the hay seed heads, because then you'll start getting hay sprouting, growing in your garden, which isn't that big of a deal. It's pretty easy to pull out, but ask for weed-free straw if you're going to go purchase it, and that'll save you the problem of it sprouting anywhere.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I learned the difference.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about planting in other areas of your garden. You can still plant pretty much any plant this time of year in April. So if you want to plant container-grown fruit trees, citrus, or stone fruits, you can definitely do those this time of year. You probably won't get much of a harvest because you're planting them after, especially in the case of the stone fruits, probably when their buds have already formed. But that's okay. It's still a good time of year to plant. If you've got a spot and you want to fill it, feel free to do that. It's a great time to plant almost any perennial flower plant, which is actually, this is kind of my favorite time to plant perennials, only because you get to see what you're buying. If you're buying perennials that flower, an awful lot of them are flowering in April. And so if you aren't sure if you want that color of, you know, what color that azalea is, you know, is it pink? Well, is it pale pink or is it hot pink? You know, this is the time to plant it.
I just bought a couple camellias, mm-hmm, because I wasn't sure what I wanted, and I wanted to see what it looked like.
Right.
And I know it's not going to be blooming, it's going to be a beautiful green plant, but it's going to be pretty.
Yeah.
You know? And I get to see what actually the flowers look like.
Right. And the same with the roses. You know, when we suggest buying bare root roses in January because they're half the price. But if you aren't really sure what that flower looks like and you don't want to trust the picture, then buy the rose in a container in April when it's showing you some blooms. And then you'll know whether you really like Sexy Rexy or you want to pass and go on to a different rose. But yeah, April is just a great, great time to be planting pretty much any of your perennials, including flowering vines. I don't know, Katrina, if you have much wisteria in your neighborhood.
Oh, yes.
But we don't have a lot. There's a few places that have it in my neighborhood, but I like to walk Balboa Island, and there's a number of homes on Balboa Island that have wisteria vines, and they are just spectacular, you know, this month. So if you are considering planting wisteria, this is a great time to purchase it because it should be in bloom in its pot.
It's
and you'll
a beautiful
see
plant.
What color you're getting. Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful plant.
Yeah. So, yeah, just go to the nursery and look at stuff. But do be sure that you take a look at the tag, because in the pot it can be one size, like maybe only a foot tall. But if you read the tag and it's going to get to be 5 feet tall,
or 10 or 20 feet tall.
Make sure that you have the space for its eventual size.
You know, I've looked at these things before and I went, oh, how could this little plant get to be so big? But it gets to be that big.
Yeah, it really does. And faster than you might think, too. So it's a great time, as I said, to plant almost any perennial. If you are planting some annuals for the warm season, this time of year, sometimes our cool season plants are still going gangbusters. You know, your snapdragons may just be blooming their little heads off. And if that's the case, of course, you want to leave them until they're finished. But as soon as the heat comes in June or July or sometimes even May, those cool season flowers will start to poop out. So get ready to plant your warm season annuals the zinnias, marigolds, vincas, alyssum. Well, alyssum we can plant pretty much all year. What else? Ageratum. And look, sometimes they're pretty hard to find. Most of the ageratum we see in the nursery is the short ground cover ageratum, which only gets about 6 inches high. But there are tall varieties of ageratum, which is just stunning and can be picked and put in bouquets. So if you happen to come across a tall variety of ageratum, I would really recommend it. They're usually in blue shades, and I just love blue in a bouquet. I think it's awesome.
You know, Tina, what I love that you do is you successively plant. And it's one's blooming, the other one's just starting to grow, and then when it's fading out, the next one's coming in, and you constantly have plants coming up in your garden.
That's why it's really cool to have a mixture of perennials and annuals. So as you've seen in my garden, I have a lot of stuff that just stays there all year round. Roses, alstroemeria, lavender, the Shasta daisies, of course, which are everywhere in my yard. And it's nice to have clumps of those with kind of empty-ish spaces in between or in front. Because then what that allows you to do is with the seasons, you get to fill in with the stuff that's going to bloom for that season. So that's pretty fun. And also, pay attention to height. Queen Anne's lace is actually been available at a couple nurseries I went to. And I love that because it gets to be 3-4 feet tall. And it has these real airy white heads of flowers that make, you know, great cut flowers to fill as a filler in bouquets, but it's also a great filler in the garden. You know, who doesn't want this 3 or 4 foot white blooming, you know, airy looking plant in their garden?
You know what else I've learned from you is planting white, because white goes with everything.
White is a unifying color. That's one of the reasons I have so many Shasta daisies. A, because the bunnies don't eat them. So that's one good reason to have Shasta daisies. But the other good reason is, two good reasons, they're bulletproof. The snails don't eat much of them either. And they kind of spread on their own. And then from April through September, with the biggest flush of bloom being in May and June, they give you these beautiful white daisies.
And it goes with everything.
It does. And so I plant that throughout the whole garden. And that way, because I'm such a flower hog and I can't restrict myself to any one color, I can have, you know, pinks and purples in one section of the garden and then some white flowers and then introduce yellow in the next section and some white flowers and then introduce reds. And that way it doesn't look like you have just, you know, somebody throwing paint at a canvas. By having the white interspersed throughout, it unifies the garden and breaks up those different colors.
Yeah, it's truly, truly wonderful. I need to let everybody know that we are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine, and the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. And for more information, go to kuci.org. That was our little commercial, and now that we get to talk about flowers some more.
Yeah, and I want to throw in, because we don't often talk about the flowers that attract beneficials, so I thought maybe we should do that, because in April, I see a lot of butterflies in my garden.
Oh, I showed you a picture today. There's a chrysalis butterfly on my gate.
Do you know what kind it is?
It's a monarch butterfly.
It's a monarch. Oh, how exciting.
We have lots of milkweed in my yard, so we have lots of monarch butterflies in my yard.
Oh, that's so cool.
And the babies are starting to happen right now.
Yeah, in early April they
come out. We tend to have them now all year round.
Really?
We get them not as much in the wintertime, but I think almost every day I have a monarch butterfly in my yard. Oh. And I have much more in the summertime.
That's so fun.
It is so nice when you're just sitting in the backyard and you watch people, like their eyes are going back and forth, and you know they're looking at the butterflies. And
I don't know what it is about butterflies, but they're just magical for everyone, I think. Yeah. So let's mention a few plants that are good habitat for...
Well, we have to start off with milkweed.
Milkweed, of course. Katrina already mentioned that one. That's for... our friends,
you have to be
the monarchs.
You have to be very careful. It is poisonous.
Okay.
Okay, so you do not want to get in your eye, and you got to be careful around kids and little ones.
Uh-huh.
And animals. But there's lots of places we could put them in my yard that's safe.
Yeah. Some others, I already mentioned one, Queen Anne's Lace. That's another one that attracts beneficials, as does the daisies. Lots of different daisies out there. The Shasta daisies are just one kind, but those are also attractive to beneficials. And we mentioned sweet alyssum. That is another attractant. So many, almost all herbs. So we have parsley, cilantro, dill. Those are, and basil, when they bloom, oh my gosh, those attract bees like crazy.
Oh, the blue basil?
Yeah. So that's great for attracting. We consider bees beneficial because they're pollinators.
I just plant blue basil just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
You know, just to bring the bees in. It's beautiful.
I think it's great if it's near a veggie garden because then you've got
pollinators,
you know. Even roses are great, zinnias, and, of course, wildflowers. If you plant wildflowers, especially get some of those wildflower mixes that are meant for our area, then what you're going to be doing is planting host and nectar plants for the native butterflies in your area, because, of course, they're going to be looking for wildflowers that are native to our area. So I think that's a great thing to have in mind, you know, when you're adding annuals or perennial flowers to your garden is, which plants can I also choose that are going to attract beneficials to my garden? It just makes your garden that much more interesting.
Oh, I tell you, the last 3 days I've been woken up by birds. The birds are so loud. I have so many birds in my garden. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. So the other things that are going to be waking up are the pests.
Oh.
We love warm weather. We love spring. So do they. I think we talked a little bit last month about really staying on top of snails, especially. We did get, you know, a little bit of rain in March, and so the snails love those moist conditions. So be sure that you are baiting for snails, especially if you plant new seedlings, because they can wipe out those little seedlings in a single night. Just chomp them right down to nothing. So when you do plant new seedlings of flowers, be sure you put out some snail bait. There are a couple of different kinds of snail bait. If you want to stay organic, you want to get the one that is iron-based and that rather than the metaldehyde-based. Sluggo is one of the brand names for the iron-based snail bait. And then, of course, the other things you can do to bait for snails is trap them. We like to use tubes from paper towels, those interior cardboard tubes. You lay those in the garden and the snails will climb inside. And then you can just pick them up and throw them away.
I find if you just go out when it's dark out, you get a stomp on them.
Well, that's my personal favorite way to take care of them is to stomp on them or throw them in the street. If I'm in the front yard, I like to toss them into the street and hear the cars roll over them. That's always.
Or if you haven't know anybody has chickens.
That's true.
I've dropped them off for the chickens. The chickens love the snails.
Oh, yeah. What a good idea.
Just put them in a little Ziploc baggie and take them to your neighbor that has chickens.
That's so funny. I've done that with grubs before, but I've never done it with snails. That's too funny.
Oh, they're happy little guys.
Yeah. You know the grubs that come in your compost pile?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I sift my compost, I'll collect the grubs and put them in a Ziploc and take them to my friend's chickens. They love the grubs, too.
There we go.
Yeah. So what other pests do we have to watch out for? Well, you're probably going to have a lot of aphids, especially on new green growth.
Oh, aphids.
Yeah. Those are pretty easy to dislodge with the jet of water from your nozzle, your metal nozzle that you can twist to make a really strong jet of water. So that's one way to take care of them that's very non-toxic is just squirt them off. Just go out in your garden a couple times a week, and if you see them, squirt them off for a few times. That usually controls them because for some reason they're not smart enough to come back on the plant. And
I tell you, Tina, last year I had the worst time with aphids.
Did you?
I was washing my plants like every day.
And it still wasn't working. Huh?
Oh, and the next day they come back again.
Oh, wow.
And it was on my milkweed, so I didn't want to
anything on it. Yeah.
I didn't want to put anything on it. And then I was worried about washing it, but then I gave up because there were so many aphids. And
yeah.
It
can be quite annoying. And aphids come in different colors, if you didn't know. Some of them have little green bodies. Some of them have little orange bodies. Some of them have little white bodies. So don't think that they're different creatures. They're just different varieties of aphids.
Now, when I was complaining about it, most of the time shooting them off with a hose works just fine. But last year was just, I don't know if it was because it was so wet.
Yeah, it was really wet last year, maybe.
It was wet last year.
Yeah.
I had a plethora of aphids every single day.
Yeah. And then the other pests can be caterpillars. But here's the deal with caterpillars. They do give us butterflies. There is an organic pesticide called BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, that can be used to control caterpillars. But I personally don't control caterpillars unless they're on an edible plant that I want to keep for me. I don't want them to destroy the edible plant. But in general, I'm really careful with the BT. It will take care of the tomato hornworm, you know, which is a caterpillar-looking.
And that's a nasty one.
Yeah, and it's a moth. It's the larva for a type of moth.
I know, it looks like it comes from another planet.
It does. Oh, and when you step on them or cut them with scissors, they ooze green gunk. They're just really.
Yeah, yeah.
They do. They look like an alien, like when you step on them, right? They,
yeah.
Yeah, ooze green
another
gunk.
Another planet.
Yeah. But the BT does control them. I'm just really careful when I spray the tomato plants that I just spray the tomato plants. I don't want to risk getting it on the milkweed and causing the, you know, the monarch caterpillars to die. So.
And a lot of times those caterpillars, you could take care of them by hand picking too.
Yeah. Yeah. Move them to another plant that you don't mind.
Oh, no, I take and snip them.
Well, if it's the tomato hornworms for sure, you don't want to keep those in any way, shape or form. They're tough though, the tomato hornworms, because they blend into the plant so much. They're really hard to see.
Hard to see, but oh my goodness, it's good getting rid of them though.
Yeah. One hint that I haven't tried yet that I'm going to do this year is I read that if you And it's not a good idea to wet the foliage of your tomato plants unless you do it early in the day when it's going to be a really hot day and they're going to dry off, because if you have wet foliage, it encourages fungal disease. But I did read that if you wet the foliage, it turns the foliage darker, and then you can spot the tomato hornworms easier.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. So I've got to try it this year and see if it really works. So we'll see.
I haven't had very many tomato hornworms.
Oh, I get them every year.
Really?
Drives me crazy. Yeah.
I think last year was the first time I've ever had them.
Really?
Huh. I'm like, oh, how disgusting. After all these years, I finally get them.
Yeah. Bummer. But anyway, the best pest control method for your garden is you walking in your garden. If you walk in your garden, you know, almost every day, you're going to spot some early signs of damage, and then you can treat it right away before it gets out of control. And master gardeners encourage the practice of IPM for pest control, which Katrina is
integrative pest management.
Yeah, so it's a long phrase that basically means only use the least toxic method that you have to get rid of the pest. And a lot of times, as Katrina said, it's just picking up a snail and stomping on it. That's a pretty least toxic method. Not for the snail, but for us, right? There's no pesticide involved.
Less pesticide we have to use, the better it is.
Exactly. Also, to discourage pests from proliferating, you want to, when you plant your plants, space them properly so that there is plenty of light and air that gets in between your plants so that pests don't have a nice hiding place.
And go visit your plants.
And then just visit them often. And if you don't know what's bothering them, you can visit the University of California's IPM website. Just Google IPM, and usually one of the first things that pops up is UC Davis's IPM website. And you can search in there either by the name of the pest, if you know what it is, like tomato hornworm, or you can search by the plant. So if you have stuff going on your roses and you're not sure what it is, maybe it's scale, those nasty little sucking insects that cling to the stems and branches of your rose. But if you just put the plant in, then it will give you a list of what the potential pests are. You can click on each one, look at what it looks like, look at the damage, and then it will give you solutions. So it's a great, great resource.
And you can also look at our website, the Master Gardener website. You can Google Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. A lot of fun stuff on there, and you'll even find our podcast of the show on there.
That's right. All of our radio shows are recorded, and they're posted on our website. So if you are interested in learning more about, say, roses, for instance, you can go to our website and find some of our shows on roses and listen to those anytime you want. Don't have to wait for us on Thursday mornings.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of interesting information, not only our podcast, but anything that you're looking for, you can go to the website and check it out. Ah, Tina, what should we talk about next?
Well, let's talk a little bit about feeding, because the rule of thumb for feeding plants is feed them when they're actively growing. And boy, are they actively growing in April.
Oh, yeah.
Growing like crazy. And so this is a great time to feed all of the plants, virtually all of the plants in your garden. If you didn't feed them in March, give it a shot in April. And the way that you determine what you want to feed them is think about it this way. All fertilizers or plant foods have three main nutrients, and they are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And those show up in a box or a bag of fertilizer as three numbers separated by dashes, like maybe 4-6-3. If you are feeding something that you want to be green, like a lawn, then you need the first number to be the highest number, because the first number is nitrogen, and nitrogen is what makes plants green. If you are feeding a plant that you want to flower and fruit, then you want the second number to be the highest number, because the phosphorus is what promotes flowering and fruiting. So when you buy tomato fertilizer, you'll often see that middle number higher than the first and the last number. And the same with flower food. And in the case of the synthetic fertilizers rather than the organic fertilizers, the numbers will be a lot higher. So on an organic fertilizer, the numbers will be low, like I said, 3, 5, 3. On a synthetic or chemical-based fertilizers, they'll be much higher. They might be 10, 20, 10, or, you know, 20, 10, 10 if it was lawn fertilizer. Whether you choose an organic fertilizer or a synthetic fertilizer is up to you, but just know that because the concentration of the nutrients in the synthetic fertilizers is much higher, you have to be really careful how much you use because you can burn the plants pretty easily.
Sometimes more is not better.
Definitely not better. So do consider fertilizing your plants, especially your permanent, shrubs and trees. Fruit trees in particular, if you haven't normally fed your fruit trees, it'll surprise you how much happier they are if they get a little food. And the dosage that you want to give any plant, you have to determine based on whatever fertilizer you buy, because they all come in different strengths and concentrations.
And this is one where you follow the directions.
Absolutely.
You follow the directions. Whatever they say, don't think a little bit more is better or a little less is better. Just follow the directions.
And they'll also tell you how often to fertilize, because some fertilizer is time-released, and it might last for 3 or 4 months, whereas other fertilizer is not time-released, and so they may advise feeding, every month, or in the case of a liquid fertilizer, maybe even more often than that, because especially if you're using a liquid fertilizer in a pot, you have to remember every time you water that pot, you might be washing the nutrients out of the pot. So pay attention to the packages and give your plants a little bit of food. They will thank you. They'll be really happy.
Oh, they're going to be singing.
Yeah. So
they're hungry this month.
Oh, speaking of directions, it just popped in my head. We didn't say when you're using a pesticide to always follow the instructions, but it's particularly important when you're using any kind of a pesticide, whether it's a synthetic or an organic-based pesticide, same thing. You must follow the directions exactly. And some of these pest control products come in concentrations, and you have to mix them yourself and add water to them. And that, of course, is very important that you follow. You know, if it says 1 tablespoon in a gallon of water, don't put 2 tablespoons in a gallon of water.
Or a half a cup.
Yeah, make sure that you use exactly how much they're telling you to use.
They want you to succeed.
Right. They don't want you to hurt yourself or hurt your plants. And also when using both fertilizers and pest control products, it's a good idea to wear a mask and rubber gloves so that you don't accidentally absorb or breathe in any of those products. And also eye protection as well.
Good points. Good points.
Yeah.
People don't think about their skin, how much can be absorbed through their skin.
Right. So it's a good idea to wear protection and, of course, always read the instructions. And how much time do we have left, Katrina?
Oh, we have about 10 minutes.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
She says cool awesome. What does Tina want to talk about?
Well, let's give a couple of other maybe veggie tips, since this is such a good time to plant veggies.
Okay. Veggie tip, plant.
Yeah.
And well, leave a little space for planting in
again,
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Or 3 weeks.
Now, here's, do you plant corn, Katrina?
We have.
Yeah. And have you had good success with it?
Yes and no.
Last
year we had incredible success. A few years ago we didn't. But it was sweet and wonderful and delicious and... You need to plant a grouping, though, of corn.
Right, for pollination, right?
Right, for pollination. So I think when I've had poor success is when I've done one line instead of one long line versus maybe 4 rows, 4 wide.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That tends to work better.
Yeah, so if you have them planted in a block kind of a situation rather than a long single row, the pollination is better because corn is wind pollinated, right, Katrina?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and so when the wind is blowing the pollen around, If you just have one long row and the wind blows through it, then the pollen isn't hitting any more corn. Whereas if you have kind of a block planting of corn, say you had a 6-foot by 6-foot area planted with corn, when the wind blows, it's blowing that pollen across all of those other plants.
You know, last year we loved our corn, but we also realized how much room it took up. So you have to determine how big is your garden and how much are you willing to give to grow corn.
Right.
You know, I'd rather have a tomato.
That's one reason I don't grow corn, because I don't have the space. But we did out at the Great Park's little demonstration garden called the Farm and Food Lab in the past. I don't know if they're doing it this year. But in the past, we did the Three Sisters garden out there, which is a great way to grow corn in a small space because you're also growing something else. So the Three Sisters garden means that you interplant corn with pole beans and pumpkin or some other kind of squash.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because you plant the corn and then you plant...
It grows tall.
It's a stalk, right? And then you plant the pole beans and they use the stalk as their climbing thing. You know, instead of a pole, they're using the corn stalk to climb up.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so if you time it all right, the ears are forming and they are able to be ripening while the beans are climbing up and forming their bean pods. And then the third thing that you plant in that same area is either pumpkin or a winter squash, you know, one that is going to sprawl, mm-hmm. or probably even watermelon, although we mostly did pumpkins. And that you just let those vines crawl along the ground, right? So you have the corn growing tall, the beans wrapping themselves around the corn stalk, and then the pumpkin sprawling, the pumpkin vine sprawling on the ground in between all of those plants.
How efficient.
Yeah, and so then you're literally not wasting any space. The pumpkin vine will completely cover the soil. So in a way, you have mulch. You know, you're protecting the soil from the sunlight and drying out. And as the corn stalk dies and the beans die, you still have the pumpkins, you know, which go into October, and then you harvest those in October. So it's actually kind of a fun way to use your space efficiently and get three different crops out of the same space.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, so kind of fun.
Really, really efficient.
Yeah, really efficient.
I've had, you know, some squashes that take over my whole planting bed, and I'm now thinking, well, we could plant other things there too.
Yeah, yeah. If you have kids or grandkids and you have the space, do plant pumpkins. Oh my gosh, they get such a huge kick out of pumpkins.
I tell you, I have never been able to time pumpkins with Halloween.
Yeah, they are. It seems like where we live, they ripen too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah. Unless I've never tried planting the seeds. Maybe you plant them in July if you want them for Halloween.
I don't know, but I've never had them. I've never. The timing's all. It takes so long for them to grow.
Right.
I've always been off on timing.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, one time we had kids over and all our pumpkins were already gone.
Aww.
And I went to the store and I bought pumpkins and stuck them under the plants.
Oh, that's so sweet, though.
I know, they were out pumpkin hunting, and I'm like, oh, I'm so glad they were so young because they didn't notice they were already cut off.
that's pretty sad.
But pumpkins do also take up a lot of space, so you got to think about how much space you have.
They do, yeah. That's another plant I don't plant in my home garden, but it was fun to plant it out in the demonstration garden. Where there was a little more room than what I have at home.
I have a squash that I love. It's called Long of Naples.
Oh.
It's my favorite squash, and it's not good unless it's at least 15 pounds. So they're 15 to 25 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. I've never seen that.
And my whole neighborhood loves when I grow them because you can't eat, I have a dinner party and I eat a quarter of one. And we stuff it.
Oh, my gosh.
And then another neighbor gets another quarter, and another neighbor gets another quarter. But these plants will take up huge amounts of space. So you have to, when you're planting, you have to think how big something's going to get. Because some of these vines are like 30 feet long.
Oh, wow.
They're, you know, easily 20 feet, sometimes 30 feet, and they'll just take up a whole container. But it's a wonderful squash. But you feed an army when you get one of them.
If you plant it this year, you have to let me come over and look at it. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Oh my God, they're the best. They're super tasty, but we're like, this year we're contemplating, because it's my husband and myself, do we really want to have 6 squashes that could feed like the neighborhood?
Yeah, exactly.
And not have everything else.
Oh my gosh. Ugh. Well, here's another little tip, since we're still talking about edibles. I talked about planting deciduous fruit trees, but what I didn't talk about is what you should be doing to your existing deciduous fruit trees, like your peaches and plums and apricots. So they will be forming little fruits in April.
Ah, it's time to start thinning.
Exactly. And what Katrina means by thinning is, if you look at your, say, a peach tree, you'll see a cluster of maybe 6 peaches all jammed together, kind of in the same spot. And what you need to do is you need to just take your thumb and flick off all of those little fruits except for one. And then you put your fist next to it and you make sure there are no other of those fruits a fist length distance from the fruit that you just thinned. So in other words, what you want to end up with on a branch is you want to have one peach every 4 to 5 inches. If you look at your fist, that's mm-hmm. maybe 5 inches. So one fruit every 4 to 5 inches.
And why is that, Tina?
For a couple reasons. First of all, if you don't, your branches are liable to break off because they will get so heavy that I've actually had a branch break off. And that's not good for your tree. The other reason is that they'll never develop into a decent sized fruit, which I've also done, which is fine if you're just going to make jam. But if you, you know, want to serve them, you know, in someone's lunch or, you know, sliced on a nice platter, to have a peach that's only 2 inches in diameter is not the most attractive thing. So by thinning them, you encourage the tree to put a lot more energy into the fruit that remains. If you don't thin, what you will probably notice is something called June drop. And you shouldn't let it freak you out. But the tree will thin to some degree on its own if you don't, by just dropping a bunch of its fruit in June, because it kind of intuitively knows that it's not going to be able to support all of that fruit to maturity. But I do like to thin my fruits because I like to get the nice sized, you know, fruits.
It's nice. You don't need 500 of one fruit, small fruit. You'd rather have 100 that are just big,
beautiful,
and juicy and perfect and pretty, and people compliment you on them.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I think we're almost there, Tina.
Are we about out of time?
We're about out of time.
Well, it's leave yourself enough time this month to get out in the garden. It is a gorgeously beautiful month and so many great choices to plant. So have fun. Enjoy spring.
Enjoy spring. And until next month, this is Katrina and Tina. We thank you for joining us.